success hinges on the ball going into the opposition's net once more than it goes into your own.
Danger here.
In other words, we inflict our game on the people. It's true.
Yeah, cuckoo land, man. Cuckoo land.
Bobby Keane! Give it up!
This week on the show, we had former Waterford manager and coach Francis Rockard and former Republic of Ireland international and Cork City coach Joe Gamble as they talked about their time coaching in the League of Ireland and what the season ahead holds.
I suppose the worst thing, Dash, is league next week. Are you missing it? Are you missing pre-season and all that?
I'll have Ronnie talk on. Go on, Ronnie.
Yeah, no. Well, geez, 100% missing it. I think when you're as passionate as what we are about it, it's definitely something that...
I don't know. No, Fran, let me stop you there when you say we. I don't know whether me and Joe agree with you there, so just say I.
Well, you know, like, we're all on social media, whatever, and you can't get away from the fact that, you know, all your mates or whatever in the club you were with, you know, back pre-season and all that, so... It's one of those things where it's kind of like, you do miss it, obviously. You know what I mean? You do, but if they let on, you don't, that it doesn't affect you. But it does, because I think the involvement, and especially being in lockdown and stuff like that, it only adds to it, you know what I mean? So I think just from the pure involvement and the group dynamic of, you know, especially the last 4 years when I've been involved, the people that you've been around in terms of the staff, and what you create, you create it from pre-season. And it's the building blocks for it. But you definitely miss it, yeah. I do anyway.
What are you missing most about it? Like, you're on about the staff there now and stuff. Is it more staff than actual going out training in the cold?
It's everything. For me, getting away from home, actually. Two kids now, so everything. You know what I mean? I think it's more heightened because of the lockdown now. You know, maybe the social interaction, you know, it's the banter, you know, it's being in a professional environment as well, where you're constantly challenged, you know, and, you know, at the minute you're, you know, everyone's going through, especially whoever's not in football at the minute, you're finding ways to challenge yourself. So I think that, you know, having all the different experiences of the day-to-day, you know, routine and that I'm missing it a lot because it's all I've known for the last 4 years. Joe has done it for all his life, but it's, you know, he was immersed in it for 4 years, and I couldn't have thinking of you know, a better job. But in terms of what I'm missing mostly, I think it's just the social interaction, that banter, and the challenge of the environment. That's what I take from it anyway.
Yeah, you're in the same boat, Joe.
Well, see, like, as a player, I used to love pre-season. Probably my favourite part of it. I used to love the physical side of training.
You used to go off the drink for like weeks before coming up to it.
Who?
You. I remember it being down in Clarny. Like, you were the big shot and I was co-ramblers player and I was getting absolutely steaming. People were like, me, Jesus, Gamble's in there. He's not even drinking. I think it was like a Kerry game or something. They were like, yeah, there's a professional compared to me. And I was like, what a loser. I was in my head thinking.
Right, I am a loser. No, but I used to read. To be fair, I wasn't a big drinker. I think I was a big drinker when I first came back from England. That kind of 21, 22. And then I kind of snapped out of that. Like, as in going out a lot of the weekends. But I think pre-season, I used to love pre-season as a player. I used to love, I suppose, if anyone was trying to be fit, I used to take it very personal if someone was fitter than me. It's just the way it was. I used to be very personal. So if you could lift more on the bench press than me, I would be pissed off. If you could run faster than me or longer than me, I'd be pissed off. If you were, you know, that's the way I was in pre-season. I was always like that. I used to gear myself up to be the best I could be in pre-season. But
finish top? Or was there anyone finishing ahead of you?
There was our courses. I mean, look, geez, if you're looking at it, if I was looking to say England, for example, and I was at Reading, you'd have James Harper, like, that man was, he's not human at all. Like, and I used to train, like, fuck, to try to get near him. He had another gear or two, and he had three lungs. Like, he was just a machine. I think the best runner I've seen in the League of Ireland, sorry, would have been Billy Dennehy. Billy Dennehy was an unbelievable athlete. Jesus Christ, Billy could run. But there was a great story about Billy, actually, when he was at Sunderland, when they got relegated. I think Mick McCarthy was the manager. And I think, I'm not too sure now, did they have the worst points in the Premier League when they got relegated? But Billy would have been only 15 or 16. And he actually told us a story. And it got back to me from other people that the first team were doing pre-season training and running, and they, and I think in Sunderland, their training ground, they've got little mini hills between pitches, but like four or five pitches, so it's a big kind of big area.
And they went, I know that, Joe. I was on trial there once, but yeah.
He was hiding behind the hills.
Yeah,
he was. Actually, sorry, I was twice. I got called back. They were saying he was bad enough the first time. We'll have a laugh off.
They couldn't find you the first time.
Yeah. But Billy was running with the lads basically, and he lapped them, and Mick McHarty just had to pull pre-season. Said, oh, lads, what the fuck's going on here? I'm a young lad from Kerry, and he's overlapping senior professionals here. Like, this is not right. Like, but he was another level of fitness. Like, but as a coach, like I suppose I've only been coaching, professionally, I suppose, with Limerick, Waterford, and with City, Cork City, and three of them are total different challenges. They're different roles, I suppose, in each club, and I was only there. I think two pre-season was Limerick, one with Waterford and one with Cork City. So it was a lot of chop and change and a lot of disruption. So I suppose I didn't necessarily like it as a coach, because it was just frantic, very, very frantic, very hard, because you're walking into a change room. Like, I was S&C coach in Limerick and Waterford, and I was obviously number the coach in Waterford, and I was the assistant manager at Cork. So you're trying to gauge where fellas are fitness-wise, what can they do, what they can't do, what players are coming in, give me other records, what they did last year. It's just throwing many balls in the air as you can, and so you can fucking catch them, basically. Like, that's what it is when you first walk into a club, because you don't have background. You need two or three seasons to kind of really have a look at if the players are good enough, obviously, and things are going well, to really bed in. But as a coach of pre-season, it's tough. As Franny would tell you on the phone morning, noon, night, I mean, just little things, lads, with accommodation and... Can you pick up this fella? Can you go to the airport, pick up that fella? This fella's can come in and trial. He's got no kit. Can you give him some kit? It's just, it's mental. Like, you know, you turn up the train, there's no kit there. Like, well, what am I going to use? Like, oh, what's the trial? Give me your own kit, your own personal kit. Like, I remember giving lads some New Balance gear and some FEI gear because there was no kit there. You know, it's just.
I remember when I signed for City there in the summer, it was like, where's my kit for training today? Like, and it was at Alec Bourne, I got a pair of shorts from about 3 years ago. And I was like, oh my. That was like the first thing in my head going, Jesus Christ, like, there's not even kit here for me. I'm actually signing then as well, not even a trialist. So that was like in my head.
But look, there are things that, like, I think, are taken for granted, but when a player walks in pre-season and the kit is laid out and the change rooms are looking well and the pitch is looking well, you set the tone, you get down to business. You know what I mean? There's no excuses, because you give players, and it's not you be the same. Like, you give them a crutch, you give them an excuse, I'm telling you, they'll fucking flake you with, like, and they'll take it. Like, don't give them any excuses. Like, when they rock up, you give them no excuses and you demand from the get-go, like, and then that's it. And I think if you have that culture and you have everything there, because I do think football players are whingy, moany bastards. Like, you know, they will look for excuses, and it's just I don't know what it is. Is it soccer players? I don't see you getting the guy. I wouldn't
think that. Do you think that's starting now, Joe? Do you think that's more evident now that people are becoming more, you know, moany, whiny in comparison to when you were playing or even before that?
Well, I mean, I suppose when I was, like, say, if I look at my first pre-season when I was in England and. So say coming to Cork City, there was still a bit of moaning. Players were still. I think. I don't think that'll ever change. I think players are always moaning, sniping. Oh, what are we doing this for? And, you know, we should be called a running club. We go to the track and players are having fucking heart attacks. And, you know, the bleep test is coming up. You're like, oh, the bleep test, Jesus Christ. You know, everything is a big mountain and a big mountain. But then when it's done, you're like, oh, that wasn't too bad, lads. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Everything's perceived, and I think they'll always be moaning. And I think, I don't know, maybe the better players moan because they want more. Do you know what I'm going to mean?
Jeez, that must have been world class. The
moaning. What my thinking of it is, when you're a coach, you're closer to the players and you might hear it a lot more.
Yeah.
When you're a manager, I say when I looked after the team toward the end of the season, I didn't hear half of it. You know, probably what I should have heard. Or maybe not. I think the group was fairly good that we had, but I think when you're a coach and you're close, I think players, and you hear it, don't you? You hear it. You're around more than the manager, and it's your job to kind of, you know, see around corners or whatever, like, you know.
You know, you're on about players there, know they moan, and you always do go to, like, the assistant, and I probably moan to Bodie. Do you go back and rat out the player to the manager then? Or do you know the coach always agrees with the fella that moans? You never, it's very rare a coach will turn around and go, you're actually pretty bad. Like, that's why you're not playing every week. You know what I mean? Or do you go back to the manager?
Yeah, there's a way. I think it depends on what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
If it's going to be, I think it's part of a coach is kind of, you know, you know, job would be to protect a lot of this shit from going back to the manager. You know what I mean? To deflect and to manipulate a lot of what comes back, and to see if there's any, you know, if there's any worthwhile information to drop back to him. If there's something in it, I think it's important. I think at the end of the day, the objective is the result or whatever, or the betterment of the player, the betterment of the squad. So if you can take something from it and think, here, do you know what? This is becoming a trend maybe. Then you go back and say, something mightn't be right with this guy. His head is down or whatever. You mightn't see body language or whatever, but I think it just depends what it is. You know, you don't go back, you don't want to betray confidence, you don't, because, you know what I mean? It's delicate. If you lose that in a player, you're fucked.
Yeah, but I also think, honestly, though, like that friend as well, I mean, someone is saying something, I think it's your job as an assistant to kind of, you know, tackle it there and then. I mean, as you said, if it's a bigger problem, you bring it to the manager. I mean, but you don't have to go back and tell him every little thing. Do you know what I mean? But it's, I think, exactly. Like, if you don't have, if you undermine the manager any time, you might not be assistant manager. Like, no matter what, the player's wrong, he's right. Even if you think that he could be right, you're like, you're wrong. It's just the way it is. Like, you can't undermine it. Like, but I think Kevin, depends what sort of assistant you are. I mean, it depends what kind of character you are, and it depends how you get on with the players. Like, but I think your job is to kind of inform the manager. You kind of have to be a bit of a mole.
It comes with experience, doesn't it? You have a bit of experience. Yeah. You kind of think to yourself, do you know what? I'll bank that for later. And if it becomes, you know, if it's that invaluable, you know, you could go about it. But I'd say the experience, I think, you know, maybe if someone is new to a job, I'd say he'll probably think, do you know what? I'll just go back and tell him just in case. And I don't know whether I was guilty of that, maybe not, but I was always aware of to protect the player, number one, you know, and then obviously not to load the manager with a lot of
more stuff like that. Yeah. So would you actually, have you ever turned around to a player and said, what you're saying is a lot of bollocks, basically, like?
Oh, yeah.
I think I learned the hard way in that one. I would have been very, like, straight up, like, I'd actually go for a player and say, like, you ain't going to go, geez, you actually remember you've got to be a coach here, like, you're not a player anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of took me a while to kind of go, you can't do that. You can't be instigating an argument or looking for an argument and I think sometimes I definitely would be very brutal. But I think that's not good either. Sometimes you have to sometimes kind of look back and go, you can't really tell a player straight up all the time. It depends what kind of player you have. But I do think honesty, ultimately, honesty is the best policy. I think players will say, I think Campbell's an awful this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, if they know you're honest and you're trying to be the best coach you can be for the player and for the team, ultimately, that's your job. You're not there to get pats on the back or thumbs up or he's a great bit of stuff, but he's a shocking coach, a shocking system manager, but he's a great fella. Your job is to be, he's a good system manager, a good coach, he knows football. Yeah, look, he's not okay, guy, like, but that's not your job. Do you know what I mean? You're not there to get likes. And
if you have the answer there and then, you might as well, you know, call it. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be blunt about it. But if you have the answer there, then I suppose you just turn around and you can deal with it. And that's it. But like again, I suppose the way you break it to a player as well, you can go back with a bit of a hard tone. I've heard Joe doing it as well, and I've actually learned from him as well. You can go in and you can give a fella a little kick up the hole to say, hold on now, you know, grow up here. You know what I mean? So you don't have to disband that straight away and not use it at all. You can use that.
Have you ever had that now where you're the manager and you believe the player needs a kick up, or the assistant and you believe the player needs to kick up the hole, but the manager disagrees? Because I think I've been in the dressing room, Joe, with you, and you've said something to a player and I've gone, he's fucking 100% right. This guy is a bollocks, an arrogant bollocks. And the older lads might see it, but then the younger lads gather around him and it kind of divides the dressing room a bit then, because half the players are like, he's spot on here. Thank God someone said it. And then does the manager ever pull you in and say, you shouldn't have said that? Like,
if you're talking to me, a manager has never said, oh, you shouldn't have said that, or you shouldn't have said this, or, you know, I've never been in a position where I thought I stepped over the line. I mean, look, if I thought I stepped over the line, I'd be the first to say, look, okay, I was a harsh there, was I, or reflection, and I would be very self-aware that way. But I don't know, not really. I mean, at the end of the day, if I was to say anything, say at half-time or whatever, like, I'd speak to the manager and say, look, you know, have a quick chat before we actually have the chat with the team. So he might say, and I've been in a situation where, look, I'll cover that and you cover this. Yeah, no worries. Or here's my 2 or 3 points I want to get across. Will you cover this topic sort of thing? So you're kind of, you're on the same wavelength, really. And I've been lucky. Like, I've been, like, I work with, like, Neil. Neil didn't get a lot of credit at Cork, obviously. I didn't either. But, like, I tell you now, Neil knows his stuff. Like, and I work with Rennie, obviously, at Waterford, Franny and Jim Crawford, like, brilliant people. Like, I never had so much fun at Waterford off the pitch. Jesus Christ, it was like a comedy sketch half thing for him, wasn't it? It was great.
In terms of the balance, and I owe anyone I speak to, because people always ask me about, you know, because in fairness, like any League of Ireland people, when you have Reynolds, Crawford and Gamble, you know, in that environment, then we have Dirk Hine in there, you know, who not Dirk, but Stuttgart. But they always, you know, they always want to know what it was like, especially with League of Ireland people, as I was saying, you know, who are big fans and that. And then what I know is, if we go back just to that question, just to finish it off, is I remember going into the dressing room there before, and I think this was the first year when Waterford won, or won the first division, the first year I was involved with them. But I remember saying to, I think it was to John Frost, and he turned around, and Rennie didn't want to go into a dressing room. He said he let Frosty, you know, handle the kind of the emotion, and then Rennie came in and then he picked up the pieces, because if Rennie had went in, he probably, well, you know, he would have, you know, lost the plot altogether. So he used the staff. He was so clever. Joe would tell you that. So clever at using people and, you know, and understanding situations to a T. So you'd go in and he'd light a fuse and Frosty would go in, and Frosty would tear the fucking dress. I didn't remember getting bottles smashing it. Fucking, this is old school now, but it went everywhere. But Rennie came in and it was just seamless, bang. And then he was just come in. He quieted it down. Whereas years ago, I'd say it was the manager who would come in, you know what I mean? And the manager come in and he'd probably end up kind of denting a lot more than what he'd need to do, or he'd have more impact than what he'd need. Whereas Rennie came in and he settled it, you know what I mean? But he lit the fuse under Frosty and let him do the dirty work for him, you know? So I thought that was really clever. So going back to that point, what I always felt was, though, you kind of started, over the years, I started to know my place. So I kind of, like Joe was saying, you kind of know, you know, when to say something and when to come back, and it becomes kind of second nature. You don't even think of it some of the times now. You see it, you feel situations, and there's a telepathy between the manager and the coach, and you're kind of thinking, I can go in there now, I won't now, I leave that go for a while or whatever. But you can kind of read them, and it's kind of telepathic between the both of you or the coaching staff as a whole. You know?
Yeah. Is there ever like proper arguments between the coaches on like who should be in the team and who shouldn't? Because obviously everyone has different opinions on players. Have you ever had proper rows over that, like where you're adamant you want a player in but the manager might disagree?
Yeah, not like an argument to the point of shouting and roaring or having disagreements. Yeah, I don't think there was. There was definitely disagreements. Rennie knows the league inside out, and I think with the league, there's 10 teams in this league, you know, in the Premier Division. If we talk about the Premier Division, there's 10 teams in it. You know, he was nearly able to call every team. Joe, you've been testified to this. He was able to call every team what was playing, you know, and you'd look at it and I used to always try and second guess what it would be. He'd actually get it down, the team sheet would be given in, and he'd have it guessed. And there could be a player in that team that might have played for 3 weeks. You know what I mean? So it came back to judgment as well. And we always kind of trusted him. You know, I noticed when I was in the dressing room with Jim and Rennie, you could see the two of them were very good together, but they'd have disagreements as well. Jim would have a real, you know, high opinion of a lot of the Dublin teams. He'd know each and every single one of the players. So it was always interesting listening to those. And, you know, Paul Cashin, likewise, when he was in with Rennie, there was always that. And, you know, it would have been a few times I may have had my speak about players, but not, I think 9 times out of 10, because there's not 20 teams in the league and funneled into, you nearly know what the team is going to be, the opposition, and your own team as well. You don't have a massive amount of players to pick from, you know. You don't have an embarrassment or riches, so maybe that kind of clash isn't there.
Yeah. Do you get a say on signings, coaches, or is it more the manager?
Manager, really.
Yeah, well, I suppose last year, no, obviously with Finney, I suppose I would have had a bit more of a say, I think, as assistant with him. And again, it was tough because obviously we're looking at loany players, and look, but it comes down a lot. Look, I'm probably sick of saying it, but it comes down to your budget. Like, it's what you can offer. Like, I mean, look, it you can want to sign this fella, that fella, that fella. I remember one time with pre-season, we spent about 3 days going through video clips, agents, all sorts, with all names on the board. It was like fucking, it was like a, what would you call it, draft day in America with all these fellas moving there and everything. He was like, Jesus, it's going to be brilliant. And then you come in the next day, wipe that off there, Joe, will you? So, boy, the heck, number. So you're kind of going, what? So you wasted 3 days. So, yeah, I like, fucking hell. So
you see some clips, like you get clips of players and you think to yourself, this fella's, like, you kind of get lost. You kind of, geez, fellas, unbelievable. That wasn't it. And then you kind of zoom out and you think to yourself, he's been let go by 4 clubs before that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or why am I looking at him here? Like,
You're always thinking, what's the catch? Because what I said before is, I want someone to give me their clips and show me some shitty piece where he shanked the ball.
Show me he's human. That's
realistic. Like, you know, give me a, because everyone's like, oh, he's a world beater, but
yeah,
it's difficult. Recruiting players is the hardest part as a manager, but it comes down to only one thing, and it comes down to money.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. If you like, if you're looking outside Dublin, Cork, Waterford, Sligo, Galway, Finhaps, whatever, you have to pay more. You got to pay for expenses. You got to pay for accommodation. And let's be honest, well, it's accommodation in Ireland. It's like going to London and buying and getting a apartment. It's ridiculous price. So you're paying through the nose. You're not going to get good players to come on small money. If it's their income, it's their sole income. It's a professional sport. So it all comes down to your money. I don't care what you say, legend. I would bet what can every penny you have for the last 10 years. Take away the points and look what each team spent on their budget towards players only and show me the table and show me who's top and second. You see the top teams at the top and second, so forth. So it's not just, oh, he's a great manager. Like, let's be honest about it. You need good players. And then, because a lot of good managers have this, oh, he's a great manager, he's great. Oh, I've seen some bloppers in my team, lads. Trust me. I've seen some players who couldn't coach anything, couldn't coach fucking under eight team. But yes, oh, he's a great manager. No, he's not. He's got a good budget. He's got good players.
Do you know, you're spot on. Absolutely, Joe. You're spot on. And, you know, I've seen it myself just with, in regards to the last few years in Waterford, you'd see some, it's the budget is everything. The bottom line is the play. If you have a bigger budget, you're going to get better players. But the funny thing, what I've noticed as well, I mean, I've heard it quite a lot in terms of, you know, managers and stuff. He has so many contacts and stuff like that. What I noticed coming even toward the end of the season, there was a few people weren't sure that I was gone from Waterford. So they were getting on to me and about players and stuff. Like, as far as I'm concerned, contacts, okay, it's good. You will, you know, obviously have an open line to somebody. You know, you might have a scout in, you know, be it Scotland, England, wherever. You might have a line to them. But contacts now is becoming, it's anybody's game. You know, it comes back to the money. I think every club in the league is offered these players. You nearly everyone's offered the players. Where's all the money? You know, it's like, I didn't have a massive contact pool 4 or 5 years ago. I do now, but with the likes of social media and all that, people are just throwing, like, you wouldn't believe it. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm never on it. I think I made an account ages ago on it. But the amount of things I went on, only people saying, oh, this, that, the other thing, you know, I'm getting phone calls off established people that, you know, want you to take their players because obviously they have a lot on their books. But contacts of years ago and this thing of saying, oh, he has many contacts. I get that. Some people do. But players, bottom line, want money, you know, and the money is king. And the best players will be swept up by the best money.
You were on about your budget there, Joe, Cork last year, and you did list the players. Why would you have certain players? Did you have a different budget? Did the budget change from what you first went in?
I'd be honest, Graham, I don't know. I spoke to Finney a few times about the budget, but like it wasn't the case. Like I wasn't the manager, so I didn't burden him on it, and I didn't kind of badger him and say, oh, you know, what's this and what's that? Because it's my first time really as a coach working closely with someone who has a budget. Like I wasn't, okay, I work with Rennie and say Limerick, but I wasn't privy to that's what we have as a budget, and this fellow's getting that, and he's getting that, and we need a striker for X. You know, I was a novice, really, let's be quite honest about it, and I was naive, and I just presumed that Cork City, we had a bit more money than what we should have had. And all of a sudden, it came very evident that in pre-season, I'm like, well, if this is the squad, then, you know, it's going to be tough, like, and I knew fairly straight into a few weeks, I was like, not too sure about this, because we were lacking a lot of players, a lot of quality in certain areas, like especially to compete in the professional league. Like, and your Cork City, you'll get away with it if you're Finhaps. The aim is to stay up. When you're Cork City, the aim is to win something. But you can't win something on a third of the budget when they won the league and we get a third of the budget to expect it to be up that level. No one probably expected to win the league, but it's still expected to compete. Now, listen, we got relegated and we deserve to get sacked. I'm not here to defend that, but I'm just saying that, like, things change, and I just presume that we would have had a bit more to go and get these better players, more established players. Yeah, you have young players, and look, young players potentially 2 or 3 years' time could be good. And I remember saying at the very end, Stefani said, like, some of these players are very good players, and he made a very good point. He said, yeah, for another manager, not for me, though. And he's spot on. Like I said, you're right, because we both knew what was coming, and these young players will be good for another manager, but they were never going to be good enough for us because we weren't going to get time to look at them, and that's the way it is. Like, and that's just that's the sport we're in. You know, it's the results business, and I get all that. And I look, I'm not even here to go down that route. But I just think
were you kind of encouraged? You have to go with youth. So last year,
no, not encouraged. Your budget dictates that. Like you go from, if you're paying someone say 100 euro a week, just say 150 euro a week. What are you going to get?
Young for that, 18, 19, living at home.
There you go. You're not going to get a married man. You're not going to get an established player. You're not going to. So therefore, that would dictate. Like, so it's not a case that we wanted to play every single young fella. It just, that's not the way. I mean, some of these players are very good, no doubt about it. Some will struggle. Some will need to go back down a level to go up a level if they do. But that's unfortunately where we were. Like, we had to get a squad of players in, and that's
why. Why didn't she just not sign 3 or 4 younger players and sign one quality player who's played in the league?
You probably end up with them with 14 players, like.
But would you not think that's a better way to go? Because I thought last year, once the squad is very big here, like, you don't need 25 people, 26 people. I know the way the league walked out in the end, you probably would have got away with the 14. It would have been ideal.
You couldn't play a 14 coming. Say if you had 2 injuries and you put all your eggs in the one, we thought, but you put your eggs in the one basket and go, look, we'll go out, no one gets a striker in centre half. But if he gets injured in the first game, you're down to playing a 16-year-old, 17-year-old with no experience. You can't get a loanee. You know, you need 16 professional players, and you can make 4 or 5 young players up and get a few loans. That's what your squad is like. You do need 16, though. You do, because you can't have 8 or 9 and then the rest are kids and then the rest are loans. You're going, sure, every team will get injuries. You're going to get injuries somewhere. You're going to be freak injuries. They're going to be anything. Do you know what I mean? And we had a lot of stupid injuries last year. I think every team obviously has injuries. So you're going to need a squad. No matter what, like, but look, there's many ways to do it. But you know, what is it? You can't make a silk purse out of pig's ear, like, do you know what I mean? That's the way it is. Like,
but do you think that there's such a big gamble over younger players? Because I think the ego is coming through on younger players, it's ridiculous at the moment. Do you think like that's a problem as well when you've too much young players in the squad and you don't have? I used to think at Rovers was one of the best dressers. Why they were so successful was they were all the mature lads, and Ronan Finn and Joey O'Brien ran the dressing room. Anything stepped out of line, everyone respected them.
No, you're right. I go back to your point, though. They're full of
budget.
They're full of pros. It's a budget. So you think Joey O'Brien's on 100 euro a week? Do you think Ronan Finn's on 100 euro a week?
I'll ask him there.
Well,
no, I know that.
You can put another 0 behind them, probably a bit more behind it, but like, that's the reality. Comes like, we're not. I wouldn't sit here as a player who's played for 16 years in professional sport, who's been lucky enough to play my whole career, lucky enough to win things in League of Ireland and abroad or whatever. I think, and Penny would, it's fairly the same, Penny playing a premiership with David Ginola, and he's not stupid. Like, we're not here. Like, we're not green and say, oh, we'd be grand. Like, we know what was needed. We know we needed all these different pros. But it'll always come back to it. Money. And I'm sorry, no, I'm saying that. It's like a fairy tale. Some people believe that coaching or football teams are like playing championship manager, or I'll sign this kid in 5 years' time, they'll be the best. It ain't working like that. It comes down to show me the money. That's the reality of it.
In contrast to what you're saying, Joe, there, you know, and I think you're spot on. You know, our team, we had, if you just look at the spine of the team, we had Brian Murphy, we had, say, Robbie Weir, and we had, say, Darren Murphy. You know, and those were the boys there. And in between, we had the sprinkling of all the younger players, Graham, you know, and we could have done with you actually near the end. I don't know why you left. what I noticed was, you know, we went down to play Cork and we were lucky. A few chances in the game. Cork, you know, should have run out. We're the winners. I think we got a draw, nil all. But what I noticed was our team, Cork were fighting for their lives when we went down there that time. But what I noticed about those players were so key for us. Darren Murphy, even when he wasn't playing, having him around, like very similar to what you're saying about Joey Brent, just having Darren walk in, lads fucking start to sit up a bit. You know what I mean? Having Brian Murphy there, having Robbie Weir there, having Sam Bone there. Sam was injured every single day. He was still in on time, and he just led by example even when he was injured. You know, and it's just having him. Like, if you're too far one way, if you're too far, if they're too old, obviously, whatever, you need to get the blend and the balance right. But it comes back to budget again and player availability. We were steep. I think we were really, really steep to get Robbie Weir, an absolute smashing player, you know, but he was, he could run the dressing room, you know, he was always, you know, without him, you know, I think we played Dundalk, we bet them 1-0. We ended up playing Robbie Weir, centre half. He was our best player. But it was just what he offered was phenomenal, you know what I mean, to the dressing room. And, you know, he was a voice. Yeah. And you know, and you don't get that from the young lads, and you don't expect to get it from them. And as Joe said, if you want to do, I think if you start with someone, start with a group of young players, there needs to be a process over 2 or 3 years. Don't think that this is just going to work because it's not. The make it and break idea of, you know, get players in, get rid of them, that Waterford have adopted over the last 4 years. Yeah. I don't see that as being any way. There's no, the thought going through it is purely coming from a financial aspect. But look, again, so you can look at it from the other, beggars can't be choosers. If clubs can't keep players, you know.
But Franny, if you think of it there as well, look, I mean, with Waterford and Cork City, like the massive turnaround players. I think we had we when Franny walked in last year, he had 3 players signed from the previous year, or we might even 4. Say 4. So you've got a turnaround of whatever 16 players. Yeah. I mean, that ain't going to work. Not going to work. It's nearly impossible. And like Franny, it came to a situation where it's, like it was a situation is if he's from Cork, we need to sign him because we couldn't put him up in another combination because you only had so many beds in a house. And. And it's the same award for the turnaround players every year, Franny. And I would say every league of Ireland club, bar the Rovers and Dundalk, who got there. And when City won the league a few years ago, they got to the situation where they had a stable squad and brought in 2 or 3, let 2 or 3 go. That's grand. That happens all the time. But you can't turn around and get 15 players in a season. It ain't going to work. It's impossible.
I think at the minute, when you look at, I'm only taking Waterford because they're my local club and stuff like that. But if you look at Waterford at the minute, there's talk, you know, I've only seen him play one preseason game, but there's a lot of talk. They have a lot of young lads, you know what I mean? Young players, and they're dying for experience, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, it's hard. It is hard as well because, you know, the turnover, looking to try and overhaul a squad, they've come late to the, you know, the party in terms of trying to recruit and stuff like that. So it's an uphill task before you come in. But then it's to blend them, get them together tactically, socially, you know, through a pandemic. You know, I think, you know, having 2 pre-seasons at this moment in time as well when the league is starting. So, you know, you're just firefighting from the start. And League of Ireland, if you want to change the complexion of League of Ireland, each club has to get out of that. But then you have to, there's so many arguments to it. How is it going to be feasible to keep players on? Do you increase the contract structure? You know, it's there's so many variables to it, you know. But
there's so many.
If I was a fan, I'd be very frustrated. I really would, you know.
Oh, massively frustrated, Franny. How are we sure as a fan? Your players coming in, coming and going all the time, and you're up 1 minute, you're down the next minute. Like you win the league in 2 years, you get really, like, you know, it's very difficult as a fan. You'd be kind of going like, how is it going? How is it such a yo-yo? Sort of league and team and players, it's very difficult. You need, like, each club needs stability. Now, obviously, not every club can be at the top. I only get that, but you need to have a better structure within your club, and there has to be a better structure within the league. But look, this, you could talk about that. You could talk that for another 10 podcasts.
With coaching, you have to pay a lot of money to do badges and everything like that. Is it something you think is worth it, really, the amount of money? It's like 10 grand nearly to do a badge for, like, League of Ireland. I think it's, I always think this, like I was saying, my family always said to me, do the badges. I'm like, Jesus, it's not worth the money because you'll be out of a job in a week. Like, I mean, how long is stability in League of Ireland? Do you think it's worth it?
I think I spoke with George on the week about this briefly, and we were just talking about... each division is 10 teams. If you add in your assistant, that's 40, you know, you're going to have, you know, 40 people involved in each of the teams. That's not even included a third coach in each of the teams or whatever. But realistically, how many managers when I was involved with Waterford last year were out of work that are now back in work? You know what I mean? I mean, you wait for pro license managers, top managers, great people as well. You know what I mean? There's no structure. There's no pyramid. There's no, if you want to call it like a pyramid structure like England, say the Premier League, you come out of the Premier League, you fall into a first division job, jump on a merry-go-round, first division, second division, National League, all the 9 divisions, whatever way you want to look at it. It's not, over here, there's none of that. There's nothing. If you're out of a job, you're out of a job. I'm not too sure. I think down the line, you're talking about the, the World Cups and all this. And I love the conversation that a few people put up there, even online, about, you know, Ireland need to get their house in order here in terms of the FAO. Don't worry about getting the World Cups. Look after the league. Look after the coaches. Because I think when you pay 10 grand for a course, I think there is some kind of, from the FAO or, you know, government bodies and stuff like that. It's a lot of money. You can't be just dumped or left out of a job as such. And that's not coming from me. You know, I still have to do all my badges as well. But I just don't like seeing the likes of, just take Stephen Henderson, take Tommy Barrett, take all these. it's not right. Neil Fenn, Joe Gamble, out of work. There should be some kind of structure that they can add back into the community, that they don't have to go off and source work in a different thing. So if they're paying 10 grand for a course, but then they end up working back in a factory, it doesn't seem to me as though the structure and the safety net is there to support these coaches, you know. And I know, like, people love doing it in the first place, but they're great people, they're brilliant, and they're professional coaches. If you get to the competency of a pro licensed coach, like, that's one of the, you know, you get a job all around Europe for that, but you can't get it in your own country.
How do you feel about that, Joe, about the badges?
It's a tough one, because look, the first thing, if you look at it from just purely, just take a step back from it, if you look at it from the FBI point of view, therefore, their remit is, lads, we can't guarantee jobs. Like, we're putting on coaching courses for the betterment of grassroots football, right through professional level. And I get it, because there's a curriculum in UEFA. If you want to manage in the Premier Division in League of Ireland, you have to have this. So it's not the FAI setting the tone that you've got to do it. It's not, it is the rules. It's just the policy and procedures of the UEFA. And I can see, like, because I was on course before, and this came, and I would imagine that this topic will come up in every single FAI coaching course from A license to C to pro license. I reckon everyone would be on to Niall O'Regan and say this and that. And I remember Niall saying, look, lads, listen, at the end of the day, it's not our job. I can't, just because you're in the course, we can't guarantee you jobs or this, that, and the other. And as Franny said, people do it because realistically, they're in love with the game. It's not their, it's their heart rule in their head. If you spend 10 grand in any course, in any other job, you'd have a job for life. You really would, like, if you were doing a pharmaceutical course or a CEO, I don't know, you know, IT courses, whatever.
Would you think it's a clever move by the FAI if they were to turn around and say, right, Joe Gamble, look at how many years he's been involved in football. He has something to offer. He's now out of work. Imagine that Joe Gamble could be put on some kind of scheme where he's making money, but he's also giving back to grassroots, or he's looking after an academy team in Cork, or there's a regional, you know, development, you know.
Yeah.
Could be anything there that, you know, that they can make a structure, and okay, the money is the other thing, and it, you know, etc., whatever. But I just, wouldn't it be great if that was the idea, to feed back in instead of feeding back in? Joe Gamble's gone out of the game, so where's that 10? How has the 10 grand helped the FAI? And for me, I think it's an innovative state of mind that, and Niall O'Regan is unbelievable, by the way. This isn't a go at Niall O'Regan, I'm just saying, wouldn't it be great if we could have something that, rather than falling out of it, but to feed back into the system where we can prop up everything. And
very hard. It's very hard for me, with so little teams, and then you have academy teams who are not full. Like, if you're looking at the English league, they have, like, whatever, 120 teams, population 50 million. They have all these full-time academy under 20s. They have return to training, full-time coaches. They have a coach for everything. Do you know what I mean? And what drives all that is they're a business, and they're a big entity. And we don't have that. Like, we're nowhere near that level, and we never played that level. So it's very difficult, because at the end of the day, the coaching, the content and the courses, I think, are brilliant. The people that do the courses are brilliant. I can't fault the FAI in any shape or form, because their courses are great, and I really enjoy them. The cost is what the cost is. No, people say, oh, they put on a lot of courses. Yeah, they probably put on a lot of courses, because at the end of the day, they're a business too. They need to make money. They have to, but also as well, they're trying to coach as many grassroots coaches down through. So I would imagine the D license and C license at the bottom and the intro courses, there's probably one of them every week all over the country, because parents and the volunteers need to be better coached. If we get that coaching right, the kids, the next generation, should be better as it goes on. So their thought process is excellent. It's just, you know what, it is the business, like, and it's a horrible side of it, like, because it is one of those where you have to wonder, like, is it even worth it? That's what it comes down to me. Is it worth doing all this and the stress of it, and you're over the job? And as I know, I've been sacked a few times from football. Like, I had one situation where the chairman told me after the game, thanks, Joe, for your effort. Look, best luck to you. I'm like, what? You're sacking me? Like, that's after the game, lads. You know what I mean? In any other job, lads, you get 2 weeks notice and you'll be put on this. And it's like in football, it's like, right, lad, best luck to you. You're going up the gap. Do you know? So, like, it's such a volatile job.
I'd agree 100% with you. I think the money is the money. My only problem is, I'd love to think that there could be something down the line. Maybe there's something in other countries that Ireland can look at. Obviously, it'll come back to finance or whatever, but I'd love to see the idea that these pro-licensed coaches don't just fall out of the game. That's all I'm coming from. I'm not saying it's a lot of money, but let's be honest. If you want to be the best at, you know, and work in something that you love doing at the highest level, the money should be, you know, secondary to what your objective is. But I just don't like the whole thing of paying that much money. You're without it. Like, it's a gamble then. That's basically what we're saying.
No, exactly. There should be sort of thing. Like if you were pro licensed, you should be at the pinnacle. There should be so many coaches, but then does that become a monopoly then for any of that? Or there's only 30 coaches, so one of them have to get a job, and that kind of just, that defeats the purpose. Then I've kind of, maybe whoever, some guys who have pro licenses, maybe they're not good enough. I don't know. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So
should they come down harder, where, you know, you have to pick from the pool of pro licenses that are there or whatever? Look, it's a quagmire. There are so many things.
You wouldn't work less there, Warford, if you had to have a pro license. Like, if you had to have a pro license, you would.
100%, yeah. But I just think that, look, and we do have really good innovative thinkers there, like obviously in the FAI and that, but you just like to think that it just comes from my personal perspective that I want to ask some away for pro licensed coaches who aren't in the game as such now. And I'm thinking, geez, he's lost to the game there. He might not get back into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but look, it is what it is. I wouldn't disagree with the price, because I think, you know, what you've been offered and what you're given is the best. It's European standard. You know what I mean? And
but even at that, like, if you do get a coach in Ireland, your job, like, you talk about budget. Like, besides your Rovers, Dundalk, like, a club's really going to be paying that much? Is it worth a lot? I'm not saying I'm just picking a club like Athlone at random. You're travelling up and down the country. I can't imagine the budget's great for that manager to go in and do everything. Like, is it worth doing all that to go, Jesus, budget's awful, and where do I go here? Like,
but that comes back to, again, probably comes about the love of it. Like, you don't think rationally. It's the love of it. Yeah, obviously you're going to get paid for it, but, like, it's the love of it. That's why your heart will rule your head all the time. Because if you actually thought, if you think logically about half the positions and half the stuff you actually put up with it, you wouldn't even set your foot through the door. You'd be like, no chance. There's no way I'm doing that job. There's no way, but I want to bring that stress on myself. But you do, because I think it's the love of the game. And also, you're probably naive to think, well, I'll make it better. Do you know what I didn't?
The
other manager, he's a good manager, but I'm better than him. And then I go, and the next manager goes, well, I'm better than Joe. And that's the way it is. Like, you always think you're better than the next guy, because that's just the way the sport is. And that's the way you have to think, that you think that I will make it better, regardless if the players have won. Like, I make it better.
It's a challenge as well, isn't it? When you think of it, you have a challenge. You're like, if take my scenario, my hometown club, you get an opportunity. Like, no matter where, like, you always think, like Joe was saying, you always think you're going to make it better, and you always think you're going to make it, you know, add value to it. But it's the challenge, and you know, if you've supported that club all your life and you have the opportunity to take that on, you're not going to turn that down. If it means traveling up and down the country, remember what you're doing. You're representing, you know, your hometown club, your hometown people, your family, your friends, whatever it is. And having that connection is massive, and there are opportunities of a lifetime. You know what I mean? You can't. Like, people are queuing up for jobs. You know what I mean? I don't think there's a thing where there'll ever be a job just left and no one's going to go to it. Everybody will be clamoring for jobs, and that's just the way it is. But I can see your point, Graham. But I look at it from, I think, you know, every job is so valuable. So valuable in terms of what it gives it, you know, us from a human aspect, and in terms of what, you know, what you can probably do for people as well. It gives you the ability to try and create something. And what other job can you walk into a manager's job? You know what I mean? Is like that, you know what I mean? Or have that much power to try and create something, you know, in a managerial role without going through 6-7 years of college or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of unique in it. You know, once you do your badges and stuff like that, it puts you in an opportunity. And if you look at my one, I was one of the, in a unique scenario that I started as the under 15 coach work, you know, all my way up through, say, you know, for the last 4 years. And I ended up in a scenario where there was two managers before me in the one season, and I was the third in the one season. And for me, it's, you know, I feel as though I'm already a different coach from those games that I looked after in the last quarter of the season. So it's the value it gives you as well, and the challenge and that passion and the love of your club, you know, especially if it's your hometown club. It's massive.
I know, like, Stephen Kenny's done well out of management, but what's the ambition then of being a League of Ireland manager? Because as a player, you go into League of Ireland, you go, I want to get over to England. Do League of Ireland managers really want to go when they're that age, going, I want to uproot the family, get over at that age?
Well, you look at where Stephen Kenny is now. You know what I mean?
But he's probably the exception to the rule, and he's under severe pressure.
You're right. So out of the minority, he's the minority. But I don't know, if you look at other managers as well, your ambition always goes back to, you know, your capabilities and what you have to work with. And you know what I mean? I think there's good managers who probably never get the opportunity to manage in England, but you don't always dream of it. You know what I mean? I look at Stephen Bradley and you look at, I think he'll definitely get the opportunity to manage in England, judging by, from, you know, how he understands the game and sees it. And, you know, I just have that feeling that he's one of those people, because from what I see, you know, the way that team plays football, I think it's ready made for a team over.
The thing is, like, I've worked on him, he's a good manager, but then he's taking a risk because he got time at Rovers you would not get in England.
That's your.
It's not my. He was very fortunate the time that the club gave him, because how much time do people want him sacked? Yeah, that's where you go back to when you said it takes two or three years and people don't have the patience.
You need luck as well, and sometimes people say, "Oh, no, luck has missed opportunities and taken opportunities," but like, you need luck. Like, he got a bit of luck. Like, I suppose luck. You go back to the greatest manager in England, Alex Ferguson, was the same. Apparently, the same thing. Well before my time, he was going to get sacked, and they weren't doing great. And all of a sudden, he turned it around. So, like, he needed time. He got a bit of time. He got a bit of luck. He got backed from the board. There's no doubt about it. He got backed heavily, lads. And there, and then, but then he obviously showed his true quality, because the style of football they had played, I haven't seen in the league in a long time. The way they set up and the way they go about the business is excellent. That comes down to the players they have, but there's obviously a lot of work done. It's not just getting 11 good players and throwing them into the mix. You obviously, the way they've played and the way they've gone about the business and what their structure is, that's been worked on. That's not luck.
But Graham, from working under, if we're talking about, say, managers that could, or that have the capabilities of going across, would you reckon that Bradzer has, from how he works, and would you reckon he has a chance?
You know what? Like, I think obviously he does, but I think the big thing for him would, he'd have to have his coaching staff with him. I honestly do think they help him a lot. And I think if he went over to England and he was working under people he doesn't know as well, and are clubs in England going to be happy for him to come in and say, "I'm bringing everyone over from Ireland"? That's very risky. Like, I think he would need his staff with him, that they know exactly how he works, because he kind of leaves some of the staff take it at the start. He leaves everyone do their bits, and then he just kind of polishes it off. I wouldn't say he's on the train room giving instructions loads and loads. He delegates loads, like,
but in fairness to him. Every management team, Graham, that's the way it is.
The way it works,
No club will say, "Look, we want him, but you can't take your assistant." And you normally take your assistant, maybe another coach might be able to take the head scout, the S&C, and the physio. You know, you might take just, and most clubs would give you at least the assistant, maybe not a coach. Or you don't see any club, unless you're big hitters like the top teams, where they just wipe out the whole staff, because Jose Mourinho, Pep Guardiola wants to, then that's a different ballgame. But I think, going back to your question about the viability of the league, like, that's where I'm at the moment, being honest with you, where I'm not too sure how viable I am. I want to be being involved in the league, because my biggest worry was when I got sacked with City, and I kind of thought about it, was thinking, well, do I want to be like mid-40s or 50s, travelling to Derry for a gig, going out to Shelbourne, going to Galway, going to the award? Like, you know, that's what worried me, being quite honest. I kind of really took a step back and go, do you know what? I know my 4 kids at home. For 16 years as a footballer, I've asked them to go to England. I remember my wife was 2 weeks. She was 2 weeks after a baby, had a C-section. I'm thrown into the car with another kid, driving to Sunderland, getting a ferry, like a 10-hour journey, to move into Roy Donovan's house when he played in Hartlepool. And then we had our third child, and he's 2 months old, and I'm going to Malaysia, and even my wife and 3 kids at home. Like, that's not even normal. That's not even begin to get normal. Like, that's beyond the joke, where, like, I've done that as a player, and I've asked my wife and family to do that with me. And I'm thinking, do I really want to do that now again as a coach, where it's even more fragmental, where you get the sack at the drop of a hat? Whereas a player, you've got a contract. I signed a contract, I know I'm there for 2 years, I know at least every year. You have some sort of security. As a manager, you're out the gap. You could be out the gap in a week. And I just taught myself, like, and that's where I'm really struggling at the moment, thinking, do I really want to do this full thing? Or do I want to wait till my kids a bit older? Still do. I'll always be coaching, as I'll always be into, because it is who I am. And as a player, even I remember, probably in 25, 26, I thought about a lot about becoming a manager in League of Ireland. I always thought I'd be the manager of Cork City. Just the way I was, I trained my badges as I was playing, and I did my S&C degree, and it was all geared to, when I finished, this is what I want to do. And then I stepped into it, and I'm like, hold on a minute, no, this isn't what I signed up for. Like, this isn't what I thought I was signed up for. And then I looked at Neil Fenn last year, and the amount of stress and workload he had. And I had many things like, Fenny, mate, you need to stop. You need, like, this is not good for you. Like, and again, he was 44 maybe at the time. He was living down in Cork, his wife and three kids up home, renting a little tiny little granny flat in Shannon, which is like you don't get reception out there. Like, there's nothing out there, and he's living in the training ground. He's staying at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, because there's a TV and he's a home there. And he worked. I've never seen him work like him. And you're kind of going, do I really want that? Do I really want the stress of this? And I kind of said to myself, I actually don't. And it turned me off the job, being very honest.
That's an unbelievable story, because I remember talking to Pat Fennin when he was in with Waterford, and I was walking out of the tunnel, and we're walking over toward our training pitches. So I'm coming out the tunnel, we go to our training pitches on our right-hand side. And what I told you is, Joe, but I looked up to my left. So as I'm coming out, the glass panels in the RSC stand, I saw someone up there, and they had a roller, and they were cleaning off all the windows or whatever. And I said, I said, that's Pat up there, you know. So I walked up the steps and I said, well, what are you doing this? And he told me about what he'd done. He's another business, you know, contract cleaning up in Dublin, all the buildings or whatever. But he turned around his words to me where he said, never count on just making money out of football, he said. Never. He said, always be thinking and have another idea. Yeah. He said, go, and he said, don't count on making money. And he said that to me, and he said he's been doing that for 20 years. And if you look at everyone, all the for me, what I look at, the people I know, say from the likes of Pat, you look at Rennie and all these, they're always on the go, and they build up these connections. In terms of Rennie's there now, he's the Irish under 21 assistant coach. He's been consistent in coaching previous that. He's worked with the FAI, you know, and he's with Shelburne now as well. He's with Dundalk before that. If you look at that, not all of us will have the affordances to do that. You know what I mean? And the opportunities to do it, because you need to. Number one, be a name, you know, and be in that group. I think once you break into that group, I think the mindset changes slightly. And what Joe was saying, it becomes a bit different then, because you might fall out of one job into another because you're in that kind of little hemisphere. But it's very hard when you're on the periphery of that group, because once you're out of a job, then you're out the other side and you have to find yourself another job somewhere else.
Did you want to stay on coaching? Are you looking to stay on coaching?
I will 100%. The fact that it's made me, you know, the time off and getting that snip of what I got at the end of the season, it's made me crave managing. Managing was, it was phenomenal. Like, you know, it was a different, it was completely different than coaching, because you're delegating everything, you know what I mean? And it was something different. It was something I wasn't expecting. So I was learning on the job. But I had time, because of the lockdown and stuff like that, I felt as though everything kind of slowed down at times. So I had more times to kind of concentrate on bits and pieces and talk to people, you know, even talking to Joe. You know, you're getting advice off people, but you'd crave it. You really would. And it's something I want. But I'm not naive to think that I'll get another manager's job next year. This might happen for another 5 years, but I'm going to obviously keep in with the coaching. And once this, you know, lockdown thing goes, you know what I mean? And see what offers kind of come in as such. But 100%, I want to stay in the coaching. But you're going to have to, you know, fill the gaps, you know, like Joe's doing at the minute, in terms of jobs in between, because at that minute you haven't broken into that group of coaches that are going to be involved in that, you know, in that circle, if you want to call it that. So it's definitely something I want to do. I won't be coming away from it. I'm only 35 now, so I still class myself as young, and you know, looking forward to the next kind of challenge of coaching and that.
To me, Joe, you seem like you were a bit relieved there to leave Park City towards the end, because did you think if you'd stayed on, you would have stayed, kept them up?
No. That team was right.
If you had 36 games?
Yeah, I think if we 36 games, maybe. Yeah, look, good point. I think we were, before the lockdown happened, I thought there was a bit of progression when we played Pats away. Mm. We actually played really well. We lost 1-0. We could have easily got a draw. And there were signs there, like, and then all of a sudden that comes down. And but I think ultimately, I don't think we'd have kept my place stood. I mean, we tried everything. I think we tried everything. Like, I had pain in my head thinking about it, you know what I mean? Like, of overthinking it. And we did the most daft things and this and that, and we changed so much, and we just couldn't get the response from the players. And look, maybe it was us. Like, I mean, you have to, I don't know, there's no defining say, like, that was right or that was wrong, but I don't think we'd have done much more. I'll be honest, very, very honest here, after the Pats game, when they beat us, it was a 3-0 at homecoming, wasn't it? And they were like Barcelona. They absolutely destroyed us in the first 25 minutes. You were what that day?
I was gone by then.
they were like Barcelona. They absolutely just they took us to the cleaners. They on the first 25 minutes, and they were excellent and full value for the win. And I remember coming after the change room, and I said, "Look, lad, to be very honest, I hope I get the sack because I can't watch that again." Like, I mean, my exact words to the team. I am not lying.
Did you really mean it?
Yeah,
or was it just something you said?
No, I did. I said I can't. I did because I don't think I could have done any more. I would bang my head against the wall. We tried everything. The players weren't responding. Maybe it was us. Maybe it was me. Maybe it was Neil. No, Colin came in. It was too. He didn't have enough games to change it around. Realistically, he couldn't bring in players. I just felt that I had enough. I just had enough of it, to be quite honest. And it didn't. When I did get sacked, it didn't bother me. Well, I didn't lose an ounce of sleep. I just said, right, okay. But I'm like that, though. I'm like that.
Was it kind of a relief, so? Because would you have got abuse around the city with fans? You know, you said you always wanted to manage them and you weren't doing well, that you just said, look, I'm happy to even step away from this if you've come in and said, I want to get the sack.
No, it wasn't a case of me. It wasn't relief. Like, I honestly wasn't like saying, oh, not at all. And I'm not talking, just how I felt at the time. And I wasn't getting grief. I think everyone realised that we were the young team and there was things going on. And listen, with COVID, we weren't the only show in town. It wasn't just people were worried about their health and lives and their so everything in life. So it wasn't just a spotlight on us because it wasn't going well. I just didn't think it was going to work. And I don't think we couldn't have done any more. Like, you know what I mean? It just wasn't working for whatever reason. I mean, so how many crisis meetings do we have? Like, I was sick of fucking meetings. You know what I mean? It was like meeting on meeting and I said the same thing to the same players or we ain't getting response. So, and if any had a great comment, like, I love this. He said, if you can't change people, change the people. So, like, we can't change, get rid of it and get someone else in. But the problem is, we couldn't change it because we didn't have the money to change it.
It was a great saying, but it means fuck all, Fenny.
Exactly. We come in every Monday morning and say the same thing to me, like, and then they go, yeah, but I can't fucking change people's joy. Like, yeah, no, you can't, man. But like, you know, it was just like one of those things. But no, I just think for myself, I was delighted, but I just think that it ran its course. I tried my absolute best. I know it's only short term, but it just wasn't working for whatever reason. Maybe. Whatever we did, as I said, look, maybe I'm an awful coach and awful manager, maybe our tactics are terrible, maybe we made their own things, but I just thought we tried everything and it just we were working with probably just too many inexperienced players at that time and confidence was low and it's tough. Like, there's no easy fix for it. You know what I mean?
The funny thing is, after the season, once the season was over, you know, and I hooked up with Joe, we're just talking about whatever like that. And I saw some of the sessions that they put on and stuff, and you were probably in these ones as well, but some of the sessions were even top notch, like. You know, so Joe's talking about exhausting all avenues to try and get the best out of, you know, what he can and stuff. Sometimes you can only do what you can do. You know what I mean? There's no way someone can come in and turn around and you can put on the best training sessions ever. But it's about if it can't be, you know, relayed onto the pitch or whatever like that, or if the capabilities are that players aren't able to do it or whatever way, or if the information isn't imparted or whatever way you want to balance it up, players or managers, it's like the quality is there. Joe, when Joe was with us, was, you know, it was brilliant, and you know, I would have learned so much even when Fenny was at Waterford and he's played. I got to train with Fenny, and these lads are high caliber in terms of what, you know, they mean even to League of Ireland and stuff like that. But sometimes it's very, very hard. So there's some of the best managers get the sack, but I don't think we'll definitely see Joe again at some stage anyway. Could be on the news or something.
Yeah,
what about you, Fran? Like, how did it leave Waterford? How did it end with you in Waterford? Because you were the heart and soul of that club.
It was a funny one. It was, you know, at the end of the season, I kind of had a feeling that, look, I knew I wasn't going to be the manager. That was, you know, part and parcel. I understood that. When it came toward, you know, the season was over early December, I got a phone call to say that the chairman will be on to me. And myself and Dirk, both of us, got a phone call. And then I found out, say, a few weeks later, it was after Christmas, I think it was January or whatever like that, to say that I got an email to say that they're bringing in two managers or a manager and assistant manager, that there won't be a place, you know what I mean, for us in the staff. And that was easy as that. You know, there was no, it was an email on behalf of the chairman from, you know, the woman that paid the wages.
That's right, yeah.
But
not even a phone call.
No, it was as easy as that. But I never expected it.
Jesus, what is it about that club and emails, Fran? For fuck's sake, we were told we weren't getting paid by emails. What's the story with there? Yeah, like?
Yeah. I must be the only line. It mustn't have any phones. But no, it was a great. I could never like. The way I look at it is very simple. Is that that's. And I take Joe's line from earlier as well. That's just the way it is as well. I don't expect them anybody to turn up and say, you've been great, you've been this. As far as I'm concerned, in their eyes, you're not great because you're getting the sack or you're gone or they're leaving you go. In terms of the body of work that you've done, you have to be proud of it and the effect that you could have. You can only do what you can do, but I remain largely optimistic because of the group of players that we had. My number one thing would have loved to, you know, keep that group together because the potential in that group was frightening, and you would have loved to sprinkle a few other players onto that and create something kind of special going into this year. But to make it and that re-break it, you know, make it and break it up again, season on season model, it became, you know, part and parcel of the last 4 years. So I was expecting at some stage. I remember 4 years ago, I said it to my wife that these jobs don't last for long, you know. I'm going to have to enjoy every minute of this because it's 10 miles in the road. I can stay in my own bed. You know what I mean? The next job, if I ever get one, will be away from home. So it was always going to come at some stage in that. And, you know, there's people have conspiracies and stuff like that, that certain people didn't want you there or whatever like that. I don't know whether that was the case, whether it was part of the old regime or whatever like that. But as far as I'm concerned, I had an unbelievable time there. And looking forward down the line, hopefully down the line, I'll get the opportunity again, you know, there.
Looking the season ahead, so I don't want to talk about Waterford, I'd say, Frank, because in my estimation, they're going down. I know you don't want to admit that. who do you think will win the Premier Division?
Me personally, I think it's going to be Rovers, Dundalk, Bowes. They'll be my top three.
All right, Frank, state the obvious. Like, I mean, who's going to win it? Who's going to win it, honestly? Who would you think, Joe? Who's going to win the league, do you think?
I would go with Rovers, to be quite honest, but I do think it'll be a very tight affair with Dundalk and Rovers because with Jack Byrne going, he's a massive loss. Like, he was really the gem that they had. Like, he was the maverick. Now, I know Graham Burke is very good as well, but Byrne could really turn around when he needed to. And he's one of those players that they won't be able to replace him. It's as simple as that, unless they go and spend 10 grand on someone. But then, like, you know what I mean, he's that good in fairness. Getting Sean Horry, yeah, big player. Sean Horry's excellent defender. And I just think that they'll have a bit more than they're not, but it'll be tight. I think it'll be tighter than what it was last year.
When you look at all the players that have kind of, you know, all the teams that have strengthened and stuff like that, the one team that I'm actually looking forward to look at is Drogheda. I remember playing, I don't know when you were there when we played Drogheda, but we played Drogheda up there and Tim Clancy, the football they played was fantastic. But the players they're after adding to it, it's experience there as well. You know what I mean? So they're kind of my team to look out for as such because of the style of play, number one, their recruitment, number two, and they've kept a core group of players together that they can build on. And it's a great model. You know what I mean? And Sligo would be another one as well. Another one to look at. And St. Pat's, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I think Pats, there's going to be a bit of pressure on Pats, I think, obviously, on Stevie to. But I think they have got good players, though, there's no doubt about it. But I think they have to hit the ground running, though. That's my only thing fair about them. They have to start well, but if they can produce the form that I saw last season against Cork City, they'll have no problem. But I just think they were kind of hit and miss. But they are a good team. There's no doubt about they are a good team.
Back end of the season, Joe, they started to play very good, didn't they? You could see in the last few games where there was a style kind of, like I said, Stevie had another few games they could have really, you know, taken off. I think they started just, you know, that near the latter end as well.
Yeah, I think they're a decent team, in fairness.
What do you think about the first division? Because obviously it's very tight this year. I've never seen so many full-time teams in a first division.
I said I think Shells will be the most obvious team to say that'll win the league, but it won't be that easy because I just remember even playing the first division with Limerick and we had a very, very good team. We had a very, very strong team, but we didn't canter and win the league either. I mean, we were favoured from the start, but I think Shells will be very strong. And I think I can't see beyond them winning the league, to be quite honest.
Do you think City have any chance?
My fear for City would be goals. I just don't know where the goals come from. I haven't seen play yet. Like, no one's seen them play, and I'm only going off what I hear. But I think they've signed a few good players. Obviously, I think Beattie's a good one coming back, good experience. They've retained a lot of the squad. and I think they'll be better for us. I mean, the tough times of last year will stick to them, I think, and they'll come strong. But I'm not too sure where the goals are going to come from. That's my only worry.
I mean, with you, Frank, who are you tipping?
I'm just trying to think of even you're talking Shells, Galway would be the one. Bray would be another one that you'd be looking at. Galway, Joe's player, and our player, Shane Duggan is there, isn't he? Dougie's there. Yeah. Cormick is after coming back from from Derry. You know, they have a few players, John Caulfield effect, that type of thing. You know, I think it's going to be one of those first divisions where everybody's going to want to tune into it. And results, it won't be a case of at the Premier, because I think, you know, you look at the Premier, you look at the top two, the next section, then the boys who are getting, it's going to be nearly as exciting looking at the top of the, you know what I mean? When you look at Athlone, the likes of Athlone, what they're after recruiting, you look at even what Wexford have done, like, it's really upscaled. That division's really, really upscaled. You know what I mean?
It needed that sort of upscaling, because with the first one, obviously, it's highlighted as much, no hope this season, because there is, you know, good managers there with good names and good clubs there, very, very good clubs, best clubs in the league.
Shells are after recruiting so well, aren't they? When you look at the players they're after getting, you know, Ali Gilchrist, like, there's a physical element to the team as well as a good, you know, technical base, you know what I mean? And good experience, boys who play there. You look at the likes of Galway have that experience as well, you know, of playing in that division. And, you know, but it's just to find, I look at Shelburne seem to be the one to beat as such, you know what I mean? And they're a team that have to hit the ground running as well, because if they don't, the pressure's on, you know what I mean? And be interesting to see, guys, as well. I don't know if crowds are left back at any stage, because it's a 36-game season. You look at it in terms of, you know, the Premier Division, both divisions or whatever, you're looking at it and you're thinking the effect that could have, you know what I mean? On imagine if the crowds were starting to come back for the running of a season, or City could, you know, in place, you know, all this kind of, if that could add in, it could come in at a time where, okay, it'll be only a few left in starting off or whatever, but it adds so much to it to finish off this season, you know, with crowds, but what would it add to it? You know,
fantastic.
Be unbelievable.
That's perfect, lad.
Come here, look after yourselves, boys. Great seeing you.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, Joe. Good luck.